Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 16th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, and all-around great guy, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Good. Glad to have you here. So, D.R., there's lots of curious things going on this week. Curiouser and curiouser. So why don't you tell me about what Mr. Obama is planning to do in the next few weeks?
Yes, there was a dramatic announcement on August the 13th by the White House that President Obama will be visiting visiting Alaska to take a look firsthand at the damage that climate change is inflicting upon the Arctic. He'll be going from August the 31st to September the 3rd. He put out a great video on the White House website and on the White House Facebook page and the White House YouTube page, saying that, quote, what's happening in Alaska isn't just a preview of what will happen to the rest of us if we don't take action. It's our wake-up call and the alarm bells are ringing. This trip will take place just a few weeks before Obama has a chance to meet Pope Francis when Pope Francis speaks to Congress.
That's right.
And it is part of what according to the Wall Street Journal, the White House is calling Obama's all-out push on climate change issues during the last year and a half of his term, and it comes just weeks after the issuance of the Clean Power Plan.
Uh-huh.
So we will be able to see firsthand just why the Clean Power Plan is needed, and also a greener in Paris is needed as well at the end of the year.
So tell me, does the article say where in the Arctic? The Arctic's a big place. He's going to be somewhere in Alaska, I presume, right?
Yes. Some of the articles basically make general reference to the Alaskan Arctic.
Oh, okay.
It will be hopefully something that gets sufficient coverage in terms of. In terms of the historic nature of this, he will be the first president ever to visit the Arctic. How sad it is, by the way, that in the 27 years since Jim Hansen issued his warning to the Senate, we've had, four presidents, and Obama's the first to visit the Arctic. It's like, could any of the other previous presidents be bothered? It's amazing.
Somewhere, I read or heard somewhere that it was a trip to the Arctic. They took John McCain on a flight up there somehow.
And it
opened his eyes. He said, "Oh my!" Exactly. You know that it was clear something was going on, right?
Exactly. It did. Although.
Well, yeah. Okay. Then it didn't stick. I guess
eyes wide shut. If you get my drift.
Right.
Sadly,
right.
In the years since. But it is going to be something. It is going to be a historic trip and something that should command the world's attention.
I guess you know the one of the things about that I have said and we've talked about in the past is that to break through to the great mass of people, right? Mm-hmm. Because most people, climate is a minor thing. What they need is sort of trusted authorities, trusted voices, people who are sort of seemingly uninterested, saying that this is an important issue. Disinterested in the sense of being, you know, impartial. And I think Obama, of course, has the bully pulpit. So for him to go to make a trip that's explicitly dedicated to climate issues, as a trip to the Arctic must be, I mean, that's good for him, right? I think it's a good sign.
A sign of his
sincerity.
Here's a question for you. Do you think it would be a good idea tactically for him to invite some of the biggest critics of the Clean Power Plan to join him on this trip?
I think that would be brilliant. If he brought Mitch McConnell and John Boehner to the Arctic, that would be, it would be good.
I mean, because some of his critics might not be scientists, but they could see what the scientists have been warning about, right?
Right. Absolutely. I think that, I think that, I mean, if this kind of stuff, you know, is convincing that Obama is sincere in his wish to do something, You know, there's the old saying about when you can fake sincerity, you've got life made, right? I don't think Obama can fake sincerity. I think he really cares about this. So what's the hypocrisy of the whole trip? I mean, what's the fly in the ointment that has to be said?
Well, the interesting thing is that on the same day this was announced, Greenpeace and Oil Change International issued a comprehensive report saying that the Obama administration is being two-faced while claiming to be champions of climate protection, while at the same time allowing Shell to drill for new oil reserves in the Arctic. And, of course, we discussed the protests that have been going on in the Pacific Northwest.
The kayaktivist against, thing.
Exactly, against the drilling by Shell. So... It is a great report, and it does raise the question of once people see what is happening in the Arctic, and once they realize that Shell is drilling in the Arctic, will that galvanize the public to say, you know, President Obama, now that you've been up there, how about telling Shell to get the hell out of there?
I mean, I agree. It's almost as if Obama is deliberately heightening the... not hypocrisy is the wrong word, the inconsistency of his actions as a way, I mean, I can only hope, as a way of trying to stop the Arctic drilling. But, you know, just again, in Obama's defense, it's not clear to me that he can, even as president. I mean, if you satisfy certain legal requirements, I think you get those permits. And he can't change the laws. He can discourage things. It's not clear to me that by the stroke of a pen, he could stop things. But I don't know. He could certainly throw a few roadblocks in the way if he wanted to, I'm sure.
Right? I think the argument from essentially the argument from Greenpeace and Oil Change International and other critics of Obama is that, you know, the same moral demand that sort of should pressure him to say no to KXL should also pressure him to say no to Shell as
right,
well.
Right, right. So Mr. Obama is trying to prove his credentials and his authenticity as a climate hawk. Tell me, are there any other stories about presidential climate hawks floating around out there, DR?
Yes, there was sad news that broke, in fact, a day before the Obama announcement, where former President Jimmy Carter announced that he had cancer that spread through his body. And it just tragic news from coming from the statement from the 39th president. And as I read the news, you know, I mentioned to a friend of mine that it should require that it should compel the American public a new analysis of his presidency and the successes of that presidency. And I noted that that Carter was arguably the first climate hawk to be elected to the White House. That he was in 1978 signed the National Climate Program Act that called for a comprehensive study on human-caused climate change. He addressed the nation in primetime addresses about the need to rethink and reform our usage of energy.
Which is the famous Malaise speech, right?
It was one of several speeches. There were like three major speeches of this nature, at least three, one in April of 1977, one in November of 1977, and the Malaise speech in July of 1979 about energy policy. He put solar panels on the roof of the White House in June of 1979, and also in a famous speech in August of 1980, he denounced the fossil fuel industry's interference in political matters in the United States. So he was a true climate champion, arguably the first ever to be elected to the presidency of the United States.
And we should note that he is he has not passed. He's 90 years old, I think, now. One of the has lived the longest after his presidency. We wish him well, and we will keep tabs on him. But it is an interesting thing to note that he was 30 years ahead of the curve, right? He was a smart guy way back then. So speaking of smart guys, we think there's a lot of smart guys at the EPA. I know some of them, and they're all smart guys at the EPA. But the EPA had a little snafu, or a little what's the word? Something didn't go right this week for the EPA, huh?
Yes, I think Progress noted that a few days ago, quote, a river running through Colorado turned orange after EPA workers accidentally broke through a dam at an abandoned mine site, throwing 3 million gallons of lead and arsenic-laden mine waste into the Animas River in Colorado. It caused the lead levels in the river to spike to nearly 12,000 times higher than the accepted safe mark, and arsenic levels rose to 26 times higher than the EPA recommends. EPA has taken full responsibility from the spill, which my understanding was done by a contractor hired by the EPA.
Right.
But still, it has allowed all the usual EPA bashers to basically run towards the media and basically talk about how incompetent the EPA is. And if the EPA is screwing this up, then it's going to screw up the Clean Power Plan too, and making all these sort of the usual nonsensical arguments against the EPA.
My contacts who used to work at the EPA made the point that, and it makes sense. I mean, you may not think about it, but throughout the West, in Colorado especially, I mean, it's Colorado. It's colored color of the mountains is because of all the copper, right, in the mm-hmm. the soil. Many mines, but of course, as you dig a mine down, eventually you hit water, and the water mm-hmm. starts to seep in, and then the mine fills up with water, and it leaches all this nasty stuff out of the soil that is passing through. So there's a lot of mines, old mines, that are full of water, full of this dreadful stuff. Right? This is not in any way a particularly unique mine. And that it's my understanding that the EPA has been trying to get this site turned into a Superfund site for many years. And they were there trying to figure out how to basically take care of it when, I don't know, there was clearly some sort of goof-up, something happened, and there was this release. But it's just the indication that the EPA is dealing with, I won't say thousands, I mean, I don't know what the number is, but, you know, lots and lots of these mines that are just ticking time bombs waiting to be released, right?
Exactly. And as Gina McCarthy, the EPA administrator, noted, it's a, quote, tragic and unfortunate situation and a heartbreaking one. She says, quote, we are going to be transparent and collaborative in making sure people have the information they need, unquote. And again, it is, despite some of the controversy surrounding this, let's be honest here. You know, I think things would be worse if we did not have an EPA. So all the people bashing it ought to think twice about, you know, the smearing they're doing on the EPA just because of this one controversy.
Right. So EPA, God bless them, they're doing the best they can. I mean, this is a tough one, but I'm sure they will. We should all be aware that there's lots more than just this one mine. So tell me, the other thing, DR, we wanted to talk about, since there's sort of lots of disparate news this week. In the past, we have discussed a legal document, a legal doctrine, an idea that is the basis for various kinds of court cases. And that doctrine is what's called the public trust doctrine, which says basically the government has a responsibility to preserve the viability of the environment from generation to generation. That's what the government is there for, basically. Mm-hmm. And there have been assorted legal suits been brought suing governments. And we talked about one a few weeks ago about one in Denmark, right, that won. And there's been a few in the United States. So tell me what happened this week on the, and I guess it's a fascinating subject because these court cases keep coming up, and each time they win a little bit more, right? So tell me, what was the public trust doctrine case that came up this week?
Well, there was a federal lawsuit filed by the group Our Children's Trust in Oregon. It was filed against the defendants are President Obama, Secretary of State Kerry, the Department of Energy, Department of Interior, Department of Transportation, Department of Agriculture, Department of Defense, and the EPA. The lawsuit alleges that the federal government is not taking all necessary and sufficient action to reduce carbon pollution. The lawsuit specifically says that the federal government has known for 50 years about the risks of carbon pollution. Obviously, they're making reference to that famous November 1965 report given to President Johnson about the risks of carbon pollution, and yet failed to take appropriate and necessary action. I believe it was MSNBC.com who noted that one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit is actually the granddaughter of Jim Hansen, the former
NASA. Oh, really?
NASA,
okay.
The former NASA climate scientist. Hansen himself is listed as a, quote, guardian for future generations. He's testified, I believe, in some of these previous lawsuits on the state level.
And so it's important to note that this is a federal lawsuit, right? So this is the first time we're suing the federal government as opposed to the state of Washington, right? And here, even here in Massachusetts, there was a public trust suit brought by basically kids against the state of Massachusetts that got thrown out, right?
Yes.
But then there were... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I believe there was one previous federal lawsuit that was thrown out. I believe it was called Alec Lors versus Lisa Jackson in 2012.
Uh-huh.
That was thrown out, but this is a new lawsuit with a slightly different claim.
Right, but it, I mean, the fundamental basis of it is that under the doctrine of the public trust, the government has a responsibility to be doing these things, and in particular, there's the quote-unquote intergenerational equity, right? That it's
exactly.
Young people that are bringing these suits, saying that it's our future that is in jeopardy, and the federal government needs to take action, right?
Exactly. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this lawsuit goes. It'll be interesting to see how the plaintiffs in the lawsuit react to Obama's visit to the Arctic. And it's going to be very, very fascinating to see how this all plays out. They're asking for a court order. According to the Huffington Post, they're asking for a court order to force the Obama administration to immediately implement a national plan to decrease CO2 concentration to 350 parts per million. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out as well.
Well, you know what? You and I will be watching, I hope, when the next round of news comes out about that. So I think we're going to leave it there, DR. Let me tell our listeners that there's been a change recently to the location of the website where you can find our podcast. It's now massclimateaction.org/blog. So it's not the old WordPress blog. It's now this new one. MCAN has a new, shiny new website. Go check it out. You can volunteer. You can donate. You can do all sorts of good things. But one of the good things you can do is to listen to this podcast under the blog heading. You can also find our show on Facebook, and that's the same. It's Facebook/MassClimateAction. Please share our show so other people can hear about it. You can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher. You can download apps from Podbean and from Stitcher and from all kinds of places to regularly get our show. You can find us, of course, on iTunes, which is the venerable iTunes, right? So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to all of our listeners for listening in. We look forward to talking to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.